How many times have you been asked to write somebody a letter, and you put it off, and you put it off, and you put it off, and then finally you write the letter, answer somebody, and the people you write to are dead, and you think to yourself, my goodness, I could have written to them when they were alive, you know, but I didn't know they were going to die. We don't know people are going to die. That's just one of those things. We don't know that. What does it mean to die? This is Dr. Herbert L. Varley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Thought for Today. What does it mean to die? Well, a lot of people would like to know that. A lot of people would like to know what it means to die because they think everybody's going to die. They think that everybody is going to be born. And see, the only thing that's certain in this world is what, Jason?
Death.
Loud enough so that I can hear you.
Death.
Loud enough.
Death is
and
certain.
And?
Taxes.
And taxes?
Thank you.
Necessarily have to
pay
taxes.
Right. Death and taxes, you know. Those are the only things that are certain in this world. That's what they say. Now, if you're a non-profit corporation, then you don't have taxes. So then the only thing that's certain...
Then you also don't die.
Then the only thing that's certain is death. You got to let me build up my subject here a little bit. You know, I mean, if you're going to take away all my spreck words, then I might as well not talk at all. But the only thing certain in this world is death and taxes. That's what we've been told. Now, we all... I get so teed off whenever I think of the Queen of England. Here she is, the Queen of England. She is the wheel in England. She is the matriarch. She is the grand lady of England. And she earns a lot of money. You know, the royal house has a lot of money coming in because it has a lot of nice properties. And she has millions of dollars coming in every year. Well, she decided, maybe about 18 years ago, that she was going to start paying taxes as a normal citizen of England does. And so she wanted the people to think that she is wonderful for doing this. Now, what do you think the people think of the Queen for paying taxes? They think she has just fulfilled the statement, the only thing that's sure is death and taxes. Now, the only next thing we have to do is have the Queen die. And if the Queen dies, then we'll know that death and taxes are for everybody. Well, now, the Queen should not pay taxes, I say. Because the Queen is to whom the taxes are being paid. Who gets the money from the taxes? The Queen, the King, you know, the court, the royal family, the royal house. And that's what people pay taxes to maintain their monastery, their monarchy, the people who are running their country. And you expect that. That is, we've been taught to expect that. Some monarchies are not very nice. They collect a lot, you know. And then the king gives to the people public roads and hospitals and everything like that. Well, how does the king do that? Does he take his money? No way. He takes the tax money. He taxes the people for those things so that that'll be there. Now, what would happen if there were no king, no monarchy, if there were no government, and people lived together? What would happen? Now, if people lived together and there was no government, then people would go out to the fields, perhaps, and raise crops. And what would happen as they walk to and from their crop? They make a path. And the more years they walk it, the more they have the path. And as they walk the path, what do? They throw the stones off the path. It becomes wider and more easy to walk on, smoother. When I was in Nigeria, it was a rainy season, as it often is over there, and we were driving along, and there are a lot of potholes in the road. I often speak of them. And there are big holes in the road. But it's all part of the jungle. And so the water level is the level of the land, really. And so the road is built across this here, and there's a river running underneath it, and sometimes the river ruts away the road. And then there's no road. But the water is standing there, shining in the sun like the pavement does, and you think there's a road there. And you rush along, trutch, boom, and you come quite deep. So when you drive over there, you let one person is the co-pilot, one is the pilot. The co-pilot's got to look and see if the road is there, and the pilot drives. But you're never in a hurry. You let somebody else go in front. And if they sink into the hole, then you go around it. You go off to the side, and you learn to do that, yeah. You know. But then you have to let someone else go first on the side because you don't know if that's the side where the river's running. But it's quite something. Well, now, as I was driving along in Nigeria, and we came upon some rough spots in the road, and there were a couple of young men there, young boys, 15, 18, and they had shovels in their hands. And they were shoveling dirt into the potholes and filling them up. And as cars came along, they'd hold their hand out, you know, so that someone could say, thank you, and here's a little token. And they were earning their money. And I think that's the most noble way to do it, you know. That's something beneficial. At least you're getting a benefit from it. The road's going to be filled after you leave, but that's nice. It's just a nice gesture. And so we gave the kids some money, and they did fix the road. Now, why is it the Nigerian tax money isn't used to fix the roads? Why is the Nigerian tax money isn't used to finish the buildings that they start? They have many regimes that come in there, and each regime milks the country of all the money they can get, you know, and so then they leave office and they take the money with them. And so the next regime comes in, and they have to tax the people and milk the people. And again, the roads are not made, the hospitals are not done. So I offered the people another point of view. I didn't say get rid of your government. I said get rid of the idea that your government is trying to do these things to you. Start having the idea that your government is a wonderful, supportive government, interested in the highest and the best for the country, and that all the money that comes into the government wants to spend on behalf of the people. I said, start having that sort of attitude, and you watch what happens. Well, now, I've been going there something like 6 years, maybe a little longer or shorter, whatever, and I've been doing this. Now, other people have come there, and they have belittled the government, and they were found dead the next day. And I was there supporting the government, supporting the people's idea of how to think about the government, not approving of what they did, but having the people build new thoughts about what the government. And the government invited me into their special parties and their special homes, and the kings were inviting me into their houses and stuff like that. And I became, you know, a desired person there. Now, is that something that's good? Is that good that I'm telling them to put the positive cause in motion, that their government is providing them with all the benefits that make for a good living? That their government is filled with honest, forthright, fantastic legislators? Now, they all know from the appearance point of view it's not so. But from the thought point of view, it is so. And every year, the legislators are becoming better and better and better. In fact, the last president that is in there now, his whole platform was based upon what I had said. And he's pretty much living up to it, having a little difficult time because the rest of the legislators aren't necessarily interested in what he's doing, but he's doing it. He and his wife are just two marvelous beings. Okay. Now, what about death and taxes? What about that? We'll talk a little more about taxes, and then we'll go to death. Now, what about taxes? Should people pay taxes? Well, it depends. I say that every person who thinks the government should provide them with streets, highways, hospitals, schools, educational institutions, what have you, if you think your government should provide that for you, then you should pay taxes. Now, if you think that those things already exist, then you shouldn't pay taxes. But they don't exist. No, that's right. There's an illusion that they don't exist. How will they ever exist? What is it we say about Nigeria, Ellen?
That is the...
Lies on...
On gold and on gold. On
liquid gold.
On liquid oil.
It lies on a bed of 1/8 the oil supply of the entire world. 1/8. I mean, Nigeria could be a super, super, super country with every amenity, and the people wouldn't have to pay a bit of taxes, and it would just be fantastic. And then they could make it a tourist center and bring people in and bring money in from that. They could have their import, export, and all that sort of good stuff. Good. Instead of paying people 50 cents a week, on our basis. That's what they're getting. 50 cents a week. And Ghana, right next door to Nigeria, is even less. The medical doctors are brought in from India and paid 50 cents a month. I mean, wow. Well, how could they live? Well, again, the inflation. But the inflation is terrible, too. The inflation is terrible over there, too. But that's another story. So, now, when these people begin to have a different attitude, we have Sam Sasu from Ghana, and he has been here to the campus a number of times, and he decided he was going to start an organization. So, boom, he starts it. And he has the money, and he has everything. Where did the money come from? It didn't come from this or that source. It came from the universal source. And could he put his finger on where it came from? Well, it came from here and from here and from here. And people just keep giving him money. And so then he had a clinic, an Ayurveda clinic, and very successful. And he had this stupid woman working for him, a real stupid woman. His most brilliant counterpart. He loved the pieces out of her because she was just really great. What'd she do? She dies. She died. So he had to rethink his whole operation. And so instead of depending upon her, because she was very, very good, and we met her and we had quite a good relationship with her. But instead of just depending on him, he had to think differently. So what does he do? He buys acres out in the country on the river and builds a hospital. But he didn't use his head. He built a hospital on the river full of mosquitoes. And so he says, that's not too cool. So he abandoned that hospital and he goes up on the mountain and he builds another hospital. Just as good or better than the previous one. He goes to China, and he goes to Japan, he goes to India, and he goes from Ghana in Africa and to buy doors for his houses and windows for his houses. I mean, my goodness sakes, the shipping you'd think would be tremendous. But it is, and then he goes and buys clothing, and he buys his parts, and he buys his medicines. Oh, he goes over there and gets his Ayurvedic medicine at such a price. Then he brings them back, and he can still offer them on a very wonderful basis. Well, he's just a fabulous guy. And so he comes over here to the United States, and he says, okay, I'll join the INTA. And so he joins INTA, and next thing you know, he's a member of the board of directors, And so now, who knows, he may be running for president. And so that's a possibility too. But he just is dynamic, outgoing. He knows his source is within him and not out. And everything he visualizes, he goes and he accomplishes it because he doesn't let it bother him. Now, he is teaching his people that they can have eternal life. Now, he's not teaching them they can have eternal life just through the Ayurvedic program, which enunciates that but doesn't necessarily fulfill it. He is teaching them to have eternal life. How, Ellen?
Through By knowing that?
By their thought. I am immortal. I live forever. I live forever. I live forever. He's teaching that to them. And his people, in his church, in his clinics, in his hospitals, those people are doing the unthinkable, unspeakable thing. What are they doing?
They live forever.
They're getting younger and younger and younger. Yeah, we don't know forever yet because it hadn't come. But they're getting younger and younger and younger. And some of the old babes that he's got around there are like young spring chickens, you know? They're running around just as happy as can be, helping him with their project and taking their largesse, their money, their income, and pouring it into his projects and stuff like that. And all the women just love him to pieces. He has a nice wife and a lot of good children, and he has to remind himself, you know, one. He could have many wives, because over there they have the Muslim program, and the government allows you to have as many wives as you want. I mean, that's something. And some of our students have several wives, you know, which is quite interesting. So, but he's a good man. He's a good man. And he is teaching, and he is living what he's teaching. And whenever we come over there, he encourages us to speak to his groups and speak to his organizations and so forth. There was one woman, we spoke at her house in an evening, and it was a beautiful house. It had a wall around it. It was maybe several acres large, the property, you know. Big, beautiful house, big, massive rooms inside, and a big pavilion out in the back. We met in the pavilion with about 60 people or more for our evening meeting, and then I said to the woman, I said, this is cool. I said, we should have more meetings. We'd like to have a seminar here. She said, oh, no, you can't have a seminar here. And I said, okay. I didn't push it. She said, there, next door, is a duplicate of this house, and I'm not using it. You can have your seminar there. You can have that house, that whole thing, all for yourself, if you want it for a seminar. Well, that's cool, too. But, you see, when you just open yourself, when you're just responsive to everything, all of the blessings and all of the goodness flows to you, and it is wonderful. We went into one church down there, and we spoke in this church. And this church was off on the top of the hill, way out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. To get to it, you had to go up and down ruts and out of holes. And the church itself was lovely, really nice inside. Outside, I guess, was okay. It's dark, didn't get to see it too well. But inside, just really nice. And so we spoke in that church. And it was crowded, full of people. We had just a great time, and the people just listened intently to what we had to say. It was a very rewarding situation. But you see, that's what happens when you know who you are, when you speak the positive attitude about who you are, when you teach the idea that immortality is possible, is real. And now, let's talk about death for a minute. People leave their bodies behind when they move on to their next dimension, oftentimes. Now, have you ever left your body behind when you moved on to your next dimension? Mm-hmm. And the answer is absolutely. Every time you go to sleep, you leave your body behind. And Anita was laying on the own bench, and she was just meditating, and all of a sudden she heard somebody knocking at her consciousness saying, pay attention. And it was a little hummingbird tapping on the bench above her head, then tapping on the bench below her feet, then tapping on her tummy and saying, are you in there? Are you home? You know? And Anita quietly said, you know, and I'm happily at home. But where was Anita? Anita, during the time of the bird visit, had been many, many places. Anita was awake, alert, of the bird, even with her eyes closed, even without being able to see it, she could see the bird. And she could see it at her feet and at her tummy and at her head. And she was wide awake. In that one moment, she was out of her body, leaving her body behind several times. Now, Many times people leave their body behind, but they forget to turn off the engine. And they leave it in a coma. You know, they leave themselves like a vegetable, you know. And you really should shut off your body if you're not going to use it anymore, or you should take it with you. Now, I have mentioned this before, and I'll mention it many times again, and none of you are interested enough to pursue it, but it's true. Each government, each community has a police department. And that police department has a missing persons bureau, or person, or reporter. They keep a track of people who are missing. Now, in every city, in every whatever, there are at least, maybe 100 to a couple thousand missing people every day. They're just missing. Children, adults, whatever. And most of them are not even reported because they just don't think about it, you know. Daddy is gone, he's gone. If he shows up, if they... missing, if they find them as a derelict or something, then we'll know it was Daddy. But we wouldn't know where to look. Where would you begin to look for Daddy who is off wandering someplace and he's out of his mind, you know? Where would you begin looking? Well, would you look on the next dimension? Would you lay on your bed and say, I know that I know that I know. Daddy, where are you? And then, of course, Daddy would be everywhere as you were everywhere. And he would speak to you and he'd say, well, sweetheart, I've been having a good time, and I decided I was going to take my body with me and move on to this next dimension. But I'm not using my body. If you want it back there, you can have it, you know. Because on this new dimension, I created a new body for myself. You know, a new, fantastic body. One that is unlimited in this. I can fly, I can not eat, I can eat, I can do whatever I want to do. I'm just fantastic, you know, in whatever that dimension is. But you see, these are real things. These are real things, and we don't want to give them credit because it's not logical, it's not reasonable. But in our art and science of wholeness, the main thing that we teach all the time is that God is neither logical nor
reasonable.
And so if we can realize that, then what happens? What happens is all these things are quite reasonable. All these things are quite possible. And we should learn to realize that death and taxes are not final. Because here we are, a nonprofit corporation, and we are richer as a nonprofit corporation than when we had profit. When we had a job, we had money coming in, and at the end of the year, it was always spent. And we still had to pay taxes on our property. We had to pay taxes on this and that. Now, here we are with our nonprofit corporation, our philanthropic organization, and we give, give, give to everybody and ourselves, and we have no taxes to pay. We cannot lose our land. We can only lose our land if we make it a collateral, and we don't make it a collateral. So there's no taxes. Now, is our land ever going to die?
No. Why so?
Look, die, burn up, sink, fall into the ocean. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen on land, you know, but dust blow away, you know. But is our land ever going to die? It's essentially no. And why should you die?
Exactly.
Because you're certainly more interesting than the land. The land is just a piece of something, you know, of substance. But you are mind. The land is mind too, but we don't understand it. But we are mind. We are thought. And we are beautiful. And we are immortal. We are told this in the Bible, and we're told this everywhere else, that we're immortal and we're fantastic. And so we should begin to live that way. And when we begin to live that way, what happens?
We live immortally.
So it is. Okay, think about these things. And know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.